You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you. We're going to talk baseball, and more baseball today. On our podcast, we got Bubba Carpenter in studio with us. Arkansas finishing off a sweep of Washington State yesterday with a 12-2 win in seven innings. Razorbacks now 4-0 going into Arlington this weekend, where they're going to play Kansas State on Friday, TCU on Saturday, and Michigan on Sunday. Let's get into it. Bubba, just talk about the sweep. What were your big impressions from the weekend?
Well, first of all, Matt, you got to say starting pitching.
Yeah.
It's incredible. What was it, 20 innings? You can go over all the numbers. 20 innings, 9 hits, 4 runs, 4 walks, 29 Ks. But just the consistency, the way they pounded the strike zone, they changed speeds. I thought our starters were unbelievable. And, you always talk in the game of baseball, you're only as good as the next day starter. Mm-hmm. Right now, it looks pretty good for us to have 4 legit guys right there starting.
And it was weird because it was like every stat line was almost the exact same.
Yeah.
It starts with each of them throwing 5 innings. All of them, their pitch counts were very comparable, I think somewhere between 71 and 78 pitches for all 4 of them. And then, you look at it, it's like 7 strikeouts. Oh, there's 8 by Root. The hit numbers. Everything, it was like, I don't know if I've ever seen a series where it felt like Groundhog Day almost.
Yeah.
Where it was like, okay, you're just going to get this performance from the next guy and the next guy and the next guy.
And, I kept thinking back about Hagen Smith last year. I felt so sorry for Hagen on the mound that first game.
Oh, yeah.
Wind's blowing, it's freezing, and it wasn't quite that cold, but these guys battled through it. There were a couple times that it's kind of miserable out there, but mm-hmm. For guys that we have, that high velo guys, their arms work quick, to get a feel for the ball when the temperature's like that, it's not easy to do. So I thought they did a good job.
We got a soundbite here from Dave Van Horn talking about his starting pitching this weekend.
Maybe make him a candidate to move to the bullpen for this weekend, or are you still kind of deciding on that?
Yeah, we haven't figured that one out yet. We only play 3 games. We start 3 games next week, and so we'll just have 3 starters. But I thought all 4 of our starters, threw well. And like I said, we got in 4 games, we got 20 innings from our starters, 5 by each one, and kept them all under 80 pitches, 70 in some cases. And who knows how it's going to end up. It's just the beginning of the year, but they all did a great job.
So Dave Van Horn talking about his pitching staff. That's the question this week now, is who is going to be that third starter? I think we're probably pretty confident. I'm very confident that Gack will be starting game 1. I think Root will continue to start game 2.
Right.
And so it becomes, do you start Gage Wood or do you start Landon Beidelsees?
It's a good problem to have. I'll tell you, if you look at Gage Wood, both Beidelsees and Gage Wood, they're both great, really good stuff. I thought Wood, when you watch Gage pitch, he's a different guy this year, Matt. And I think Dave referred to it in the post game. He really didn't have his breaking ball. So he primarily threw fastball cutter. And that cutter that he's throwing around 90 miles an hour is mm-hmm. ridiculous. And I thought he had a little bit of tough luck. I think, the ball to center field, Davalon was aggressive getting to it. He got by him. If he cuts that ball off, it's first and third. He was trying to be aggressive to cut that runner down going from first to third. As a result, he got by him. Run scores. But if he would have cut that ball off, you got runners at first and third. Gage has a chance to get a double play ball, get out of the inning. Maybe no runs allowed. But, and then there was a sack fly to center. So, he gave up a couple of runs, but it could have been a different scenario there. But, boy, his stuff was just electric. And he still didn't have his breaking ball. But these guys are all good enough. If one pitch isn't on, they've got the stuff to go to something else. It's incredible.
So when you say Gage looks different, what is it about him in particular that looks different to you?
So all of his pitches have a little more life to them. Now, if you look at the pure numbers on TrackMan, they're better. Everything's better. But I look at it like watching him throw from ground level, from the dugout, all of his pitches just have a little more life. His fastball, a little more carry. His breaking ball, a little more bite. That cutter, it comes out of the same tunnel as that fastball, and at the last minute, it's nasty, Matt. And it's you know, it's just he's got multiple weapons to go to, but he just looks – he looks different. He's just got a little extra to him this year.
Let's talk about Landon Beidelsees and what he did yesterday, because he's an interesting – and every pitcher is like this, but, you know, if let's say he goes to the bullpen, if they ask him to come out and throw – I don't know, one inning, two innings, he's just going to let it loose.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more in the tank than I think maybe we saw yesterday, be it because of the cold, be it because of, you know, early in the season. I just think that, like, let's say in Arlington, if they say, hey, Landon, can you go throw the seventh inning for us against TCU, I think that it's going to look like a much different pitcher than what you saw yesterday.
I think so. I mean, it was cold yesterday. and
pretty miserable.
And I think he threw hard enough. He knew what he had to do to maneuver through the lineup, and I think that's what he did yesterday. It's, I think when he needs more, he's going to reach back, and you're going to see a higher number out of him. You're going to see mid-90s consistently, you know, maybe even more than that, maybe upper 90s. But he knew what he had to do yesterday to get outs. And like, I agree, if he comes in late in the game, high leverage situation, you're going to see a different. You're going to see a little bit more on that fastball.
I was listening to your radio broadcast yesterday. You know, he's 6'7". But you made a good point that you don't see a lot of 6'7" guys with such a short arm motion.
Okay, so Phil and I talk a lot about, I view things from the lens of the batter's box. Mm-hmm. And I look at a lot of guys that are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8". For me, they were always easy to hit because they're very deliberate. Boom, they're right here. You see the ball early. Beidelsees didn't like that. I mean, he hides the ball, and he's got a really quick arm. The ball jumps out. It's that perceived velocity. You know, radar gun might say 95, but your eyes say 100. And that's what makes him so tough. And every ball comes out of that same slot or that same window. So it's not like you can say, okay, his fastball's here, changeup's here. And even if there's an inch or two, if you're a hitter, see that. And these guys, he's phenomenal. I mean, of tunneling that baseball and keeping it. And it's just the speed of his arm. And like I said, his ability to hide the ball like he does. Zach does a great job of it too. Root does a great job. Actually, I'll tell you what, all four of our starters do. I mean, the ball just jumps on top of you.
You know, one of the things I've been talking about ever since I went out and, you know, started watching them in the preseason is how well this team throws strikes and how that's not always the case, especially this early in the year when it's cold, when you're just kind of getting things ramped back up. But you look at these four games, these were their strike totals, 89 out of 136 pitches, 103 out of 152 pitches, 69 out of 96 pitches, and 68 out of 100 pitches. That's 329 strikes out of 484 pitches, a strike percentage of 68% this week. That's really good, especially for the opening weekend.
Yeah. Considering the weather and all things account, that's impressive. But you know, that's a Matt Hobbs pitching staff. I mean, he wants those guys to attack the zone, and they do a great job of it. They did this weekend.
Dave Van Horn talked yesterday in his post game press conference about the ability to throw strikes, and this is what he had to say.
First weekend, the guys had their control.
It's All four of our starters are strike throwers this weekend. And a lot of the guys come out of the pen, they throw it over the plate as well. And that's what you have to do. I mean, even guys that are high-velocity guys have been throwing it over the plate. And, you know, we had a freshman come in throwing the ball upper 90s over the plate. You know, we had a sophomore closer come in, throw the ball over the plate, same velocity. It's, you know, if you make them earn it throughout the season, it just makes it a lot better. And, yeah, that's one thing that I think that we do here is we throw the ball over the plate. Last year we did fade a little bit, and but the guys that were walking people last year at the end of the year they walked guys in the fall. We do the previous fall. We didn't see that this fall from our guys. They threw strikes and they got better.
You know, it feels to me like pitching and defense have really become the calling card of the Razorbacks for the last. You know, I mean, you could probably go back several years, but. But really in this run over the last 3 or 4 years that they've had, it feels like that's been their identity, and I think that could be an identity again this year.
I think so, but they don't want to be – I think I think we've relied too much on pitching and defense.
Well, that's why they went and changed offensive philosophy.
Yeah, and then that's what you see out there this weekend, up and down the lineup. But you're right. I mean, that's what, when you think of a Razorback team, you think of dominant pitching, and that's where we've been the last several years, and good defense. You know, we made a few blunders on defense this weekend. You can tell, defensively, we made a few mistakes, but we're going to be good. I mean, we've got the guys to do it. We just made a couple of mistakes.
We're going to hold off talking about Carson Wiggins because I want to get a little bit more in depth on him here in just a second. But bullpen in general, your thoughts this weekend?
Well, I was impressed with Parker Coyle. Came in a tough situation, made some big pitches. Fouch looked good. It's good to see those two guys, especially Parker Coyle, coming in and throwing that fastball in on the righties. You know, when he throws in, I don't know if it's just a natural cut or if he cuts it intentionally, but it's kind of like a Caleb Monk a couple years ago, mm-hmm. had that cut fastball in on the righties. That's a tough pitch. So I thought Parker looked really good this weekend, and, Fouch, of course, looked good. And, when those dudes were pitching, it was really cold that day.
It was cold. Like, was there a day where it wasn't uncomfortable for pitchers?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
But I think game two got really cold, mm-hmm. On Friday. I don't know. I don't get cold real easy, Matt. I was cold all weekend.
You sit up there in the booth with your window open.
I got to have the window open. You know, Phil and I, we're creatures of habit. If my window is closed, I don't feel like I'm in a ballpark.
I understand that. I can totally. You know, I haven't done any college baseball play-by-play, but I do some high school football stuff. The worst is when they've got the press box windows that won't open, like Springdale. You know, but like you can't, and it bothers me. I don't know if you're like this when you're on the air, but like when you can hear your voice reverberating off of, around you. Oh man, that's the worst.
Well, I tell you, Phil was giving me a hard time. My window wouldn't shut. It wouldn't go up and down, so I brought a big can of WD-40 I've seen before the game, and I got it all lubed up. Of course, I got it all over the desk and everything, but like Tim the Tool Man, I had to fix my window.
The worst one, we had a game at Harbor this last year, and it was like, I mean, it was raining cats and dogs that night, and I couldn't see out the window. We needed like a windshield wiper or something on our press box window. I mean, you're calling plays, and it's just kind of like, everything's kind of delayed, so that's one of the worst feelings. Wiggins, I mean, what do you say about what he did? I was blown away by him, and it's not just velocity. I mean, the velocity, it wows you. You know, and I wrote this, that he threw 13 fastballs, or he threw 16 fastballs with an average velocity of 99.1 miles an hour. But he landed 13 of them for strikes. I mean, so it's not just – we've seen guys that have come through here in the past who, they can throw hard, but they can't necessarily put it over the plate consistently when they throw it hard. We'll see if this is, one time with him or if this is something he can repeat. I suspect it's something he can repeat, but it was not just the velocity, it was the ability to put it over the plate. I thought it was awfully impressive for a freshman.
I agree. And, I think we've become kind of numb to the velocity. At least I have. Everyone throws hard. I mean, everyone that comes in here from the SEC, it's impressive to see 100, but to see 100 down and away on the black, that's impressive.
Here's
and that's
a video
what,
right
that's
here.
What he did. Boy, and that's a nasty slider right there. He just struck that dude out on.
And that's the thing. It's like he can land an off-speed pitch, and I think that's what makes him unique.
Yeah, but he came in and he's throwing 100 miles an hour, but he was spotting it at the bottom of the zone, and I don't like to say pitches are unhittable, but a couple of pitches he was spotting down there at 100, down and away to a righty, that's just about unhittable, and it was really good to see. It's encouraging to see him do that. If his ability to locate, mm-hmm. like I said, a lot of guys throw hard, but if you can spot that up. Good luck.
How similar would you say he is to Christian Fouch?
They're totally different.
Okay.
Believe it or not. Fouch is on one side of the rubber. I think Wiggins is on the other side. Fouch has probably 18, 20 inches run on his fastball. They both throw hard. I think it's – I haven't – I haven't seen enough of Wiggins yet. I know Fouts throws a real heavy ball. It's like hitting a bowling ball. But his ball moves, you know, it's got a ton of arm side run on it. I think Wiggins is more of just a get on the heel, throw downhill type guy and tunnel that slider off that fastball. But, you know, I'm keep watching him. I've kind of been lucky enough to watch Wiggins kind of grow up playing for the prospects. And but he's gotten better every year. And the thing I like about him, he's got a little bulldog in him when he's out there on the mound, and that's a big bulldog. That's what I like.
Well, the reason I asked that is because, you know, Fouts is the team's closer. I don't think anybody disputes that at all. But is there room for a second closer like a Carson Wiggins?
Oh, absolutely. Let's say Fouts comes in on a Friday night, throws two innings, you know, Saturday, then probably Wiggins is your guy. And the thing is, Matt, that makes this pitching staff so unique, it could be bottle cheese, you know? Honestly, if, you know, you could put all of our starters in the – that's what's incredible. Mm-hmm. To have four starters that have such swing and miss stuff, you could take any of these four guys and put in the bullpen as a closer. But back to your point about Fouts, he's definitely the closer. And, you know, you talk about 100 miles an hour with that much movement on it, I mean, ridiculous. Plus, Fouts has a cutter. It's 90, 92. He's got a splitty. Those around 90. Just filthy stuff.
All right. We've had Bubba uncomfortable long enough talking about pitching. We'll get to hitting here in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, you can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. I'm going to get to feeling better at some point. This crap has got to go. It's baseball season. It's always like this first weekend. I got to get that last little bout of yuckiness out of my system. And
I like the way you're battling through it, though.
I am battling.
Yeah, I told Phil, I said, you know, we talk about players being a reflection of Dave Van Horn. You know, they kind of take on his personality, yeah. That tough, gritty personality. Phil bled through one whole game. He had a cut right here on his thumb, and he just kept bleeding. So I gave him some props for that. So I'll give you some props. You're kind of morphing into Dave Van Horn. You're tough. A lot of guys would have shut it down, Matt.
Yeah, I had to shut it down yesterday, but I'm back today. So the play of the weekend, maybe the play of the year, we'll see. Game one, Arkansas's down 2-1, one out, runner at third, and Vahivo Loy makes an incredible individual play, not only to catch this ball, and then you're going to see the highlight right here. We'll play it over a couple of times. Not only to catch this ball, Bubba, but the throw that he makes back toward the plate and Helfrich to make the swipe on this guy's back. This is incredible.
I mean, if you look, there's so many things in that play. I mean, first of all, I don't know if Helfrich gets enough credit for picking that ball with a catcher's mitt and making a tag like he did. Tough play. But for Ava to go back and get that ball, right off the bat, I don't know if you noticed, he initially took a couple of steps and then, you know, didn't think he needed to go after it. Then he realized the center fielder and left fielder, they weren't going to get to it, and then he took off after it. So just the catch itself is pretty incredible with the wind blowing like it was, that ball off a lefty bat slicing like that. Mm-hmm. But to turn, catch it, plant the right foot, turn and throw all in one move while falling backwards. Now, the only thing I wish I'd have gotten is the distance of that. Where he caught that ball, but still, that's an incredible throw. And just the awareness, you know, everything about it was great. Now, in a perfect world, you kind of hope your center fielder comes in and catches that ball. Mm-hmm. But you could see Justin Thomas coming in, and he shuts it down at the last minute. So Verhaven knew he had it. He had to have called him off because Justin shut it down. But just an incredible play. And, you know, you think back about last year. You know, for me, the pump fake from Peyton Holt, play of the year. I've never seen anything like it. I don't know that we'll see a better play than that all year.
It was incredible. And that was a question that a lot of people asked was, like, can you see the play of the year on opening day? We'll find out, I guess. But I thought it was so important for him to make that play. I don't know that they come back and win the game if he doesn't make that play. Baseball is such a game of momentum, and it just gave momentum right back to Arkansas's, you know, dugout, and then here they come, and Washington State can't throw a strike in the bottom of the 10th.
I knew. I told Phil after that play, I said, we got this. I mean, we got them right where we want them. But you're right. If he doesn't make that play, it's a two-run game. It's just different. It's different mentality. But you're right. I think that momentum carried over, and then the hitter stepped up, a little more pressure on the pitcher, and he just wasn't able to throw strikes.
So my big takeaway from the weekend was Brent Iredale, and – I mean, we've seen this from him in practice, but you always wonder, okay, is that going to translate to the game? And, I mean, we saw it from him in junior college, but there's always that jump from junior college. Now, granted, Washington State was throwing like a JUCO All-Star team, their pitching staff. It seemed like everybody was a JUCO All-American last year. But I was really impressed with the way that Iredale hit this weekend, and I think we've got some highlights here that we're going to show from him. This is the sac fly that he had. Just kind of take us through that swing.
Well, it's off-speed pitch. Once again, he knew what he had to do. His direction is up the middle. So mm-hmm. right there, he's thinking center, right, center. If he's thinking pull, he rolls over that ball, doesn't get the sack fly. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's looking out over the plate, hitting it, thinking center, right, center, bat path, breaking ball, he's able to elevate it versus rolling over it. But you watch him, and it's – are you going to show any more clips?
Yeah, I think we got a couple more here. Okay. Here's this one again.
But that's just a veteran swing right there, knowing what he had to do to get that runner in.
So while Sydney pulls up another clip, you know, you were talking to him after one of the games. I think it was after the game where he hit two home runs, and you told him, you know, it wasn't the home runs that caught your attention. It was his ability to go the other way with a runner at third and one out and be able to get that guy home. He seems like he's got really good bat control.
He does. And awareness. I told him, I said, people think I'm crazy when I say stuff like this. I like the home runs. I love the game two. We struggled to score in game one. Game two, his first at bat, there's a runner at third, one out, and he had two strikes on him. Got a fastball inner third, and you could tell he didn't try to. All he was trying to do is hit it to the right side and get that run in. So just a simple ground ball to second to score that run with one out. That really impressed me because I call that an unselfish at bat. If you get nine guys out there on the field with taking unselfish at bats, unselfish approach like that, like you look at Justin Thomas all weekend, drew walks, mm-hmm. Didn't try to do too much, but that type of at bat right there wins championships.
And I thought, you know, he easily could have had four home runs this weekend. He had the two in that one game. But on opening day, he hits one right into the teeth of the wind into center field. That ball's gone most days at that ballpark. And then what did you think of the review where the ball landed right around the top of the yellow line? Dolan told me he thought that I was wrong whenever I said that it was questionable. It looked like to me that it hit just above the yellow line and bounce back in. I don't know that the ball bounces back into play as hard as it did without hitting that concrete wall. I don't know that it hits the yellow line and then bounces as hard as it did.
Okay, so I'm gonna go investigate out there. But Brett Dolan and I had the same talk. He thought I was talking about it hitting the rail. It didn't hit the rail. It cleared the yellow. The yellow's soft. It's mm-hmm. a pad.
And then there's a little concrete wall right above it.
And that's on the backside, mm-hmm. So it's got to go over the yellow to hit that concrete piece. Mm-hmm. And then there's also green posts behind there, mm-hmm. right behind the fence. So I think it hit either the top of one of those green posts or that concrete piece or whatever that is on the other side of the yellow. But bottom line is it cleared the yellow. Now, I don't know the official rule. I wanted to ask Dave yesterday. He didn't get a chance to. But if it clears the yellow, in my book, that's a home run.
That's what I thought, too.
And you know, Brett Dolan and I disagree on that. But I really do want to find out the actual ruling on that because yeah. I think he got hosed on that. I think it was a home run. Ball you're talking about to center field is 105 off the bat. Most days, that ball's halfway up the batter's eye. But that ball was smoked to center. It's not like he sliced it either. He backspun that thing, and it any other day, that's gone.
And it would have been a walk-off home run had it left the ballpark.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing, you watch him hit, man, a lot of big guys like that, they'll spin off the ball. Or when they try to go the other way, they'll push it. His swing direction is perfect to me. It's a swing direction that takes him right back up the middle. Then when he gets a ball inside, he can snap that bat head out there and pull it. If he needs to, pull his hands inside and hit it to right field. He lined out to right twice yesterday with a submariner on the mound. Two fastballs in, got his hands inside and hit him to right field. Now, with a sidearm guy, that ball running back in, I'd rather him hit that in a hog pen, but still a great job of getting his hands in there and hitting a line drive to right field.
Going back to bat control, I don't know that we've seen a lot of guys like him come through here in the last few years.
Well, look at that same scenario in the past, and I'm not knocking anybody. I love anybody who's ever put on a Razorback uniform, but how many times have we seen that same situation, runner at third, four-hole hitter up, five, three, middle of the order guy, or just anyone in the lineup, roll over to third, and you don't get the run in, or you strike out, or you pop up. He made a conscious effort in that situation to pull his hands aside and just hit a ground ball. He knew a ground ball in the second was going to score a run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't show up in the stat sheet, really, but it's one of those at-bats that's really impressive to me. It says a lot about him as a player, and that's what I love.
Do you track quality at-bats?
I track hard hit at bats. Okay. I track hard hit at bats, hard hit balls. I track chase. I hate chase pitches. I hate it when you expand the zone, you chase balls out of the zone. We didn't do much of that this weekend. I take that back. Friday, the first starter chased a lot of changeups out of the zone. That guy, we've got to hunt the ball up. I think that was a unique pitch. We hadn't seen a lot of it, that velocity. I think it took us a little bit to adjust to it.
Other offensive takeaways this weekend, what stood out to you? Because it felt like for a while that Iredell was really the only guy that was standing out. But, you know, you kind of take a step back, and obviously having yesterday's big game, helps pad stats somewhat. Justin Thomas and his ability to take walks is really the first thing that jumps out to me after Iredell.
Yeah, I love Justin Thomas, and I think
seven walks.
Yeah, that's impressive, and just good APs. You know, just not – you know, those are quality at bats where you go up there and you grind out an at bat. You know, you either draw a walk, you know, get on an error, whatever. But he's constantly putting pressure on the pitcher. Once he gets on base, he's a threat. To me, Maxwell looks like a hitter. And I'll tell you who really Carson Bowles mm-hmm. in the last game. I go off of the way you take pitches. I watch a guy like a Maxwell take pitches, really good takes. Iredell, great takes. Bowles came in, and I really liked the fact that he laid off some breaking balls away, got fastballs in hitters' counts, and did some damage with it. I thought he looked really good at the plate yesterday, too.
Well, and the question with Bowles was going to be, you know, he played D2 baseball for, what, 3-4 years. How does he react to a higher level of pitching? And maybe we don't know the answer to that yet because they're going to see a lot better pitching than what they saw from Washington State. But you know, he was one that stood out to me in the preseason too. You know, it seemed like every day there's a hit, and we know that the guys that he's hitting off of in those scrimmages can really pitch.
Well, I was looking back here. One of his hits, a line drive to right, 2-2 fastball up. It was actually out of the zone up. And he was able to get to it. Now, it wasn't an SEC fastball, but it's still fastball up in the zone. I think if you hit the numbers he put up, what, he hit 475 last year, something like that?
Something crazy, yeah.
If you hit 475, I don't care if it's D2, JUCO, Little League, whatever. If you hit 475, in my book, you can hit.
We'll see with him. Like other backups, so to speak. I mean, you know, Cahillo Loy hits a couple of home runs. I thought Cam Kozel had a pretty good day yesterday. Zane Becker, when he got his chance with Elfrick sitting out on Saturday, he doubled twice. Just your thoughts about those players.
Yeah, I thought Becker looked good. You know, I like a two out RBI double he hit over center fielder's head, back spun it over his head. Guy had been playing shallow, and I just knew eventually someone was going to get one over his head. Kozel looked good, had some really good at bats. Cajillo, here's what I like about Cajillo. First of all, when he swings, he brings it. That dude's got some bat speed. I like the fact Cajillo knows what he's good at, and he obviously likes the ball, you know, the inner part of the plate. Now, he can go the other way. He proved it against Oklahoma State in that that Friday night scrimmage. He hit a base hit to right field. But he's a guy that knows what he's looking for, and when he gets it, boy, he unloads on it. He put a couple of really good swings on some balls. And so one was a 3-1 fastball. I want to say one was like an 0-2 slider. That he hit out, but just one of them was inside corner, and instead of hooking it foul, he kept it fair. So there's a lot of guys on the bench that got a chance to play and did a really good job, and so there's a lot of depth. And you know, we talk a lot about the depth of the pitching staff. I mean, there's a lot of dudes on that bench that can flat out play baseball.
Yeah, I mean, these next couple of 3 weeks, I think, is going to be a lot of figuring out who is most consistent. And I think you're going to see a lineup that's really, you know, fluctuating quite a bit from game to game.
So Phil and I talked about an error yesterday. We don't have a switch hitter on this team, but Dave's got the ability. Yesterday we threw seven righties at him. We had two left-handed hitters in the lineup. Technically, you can move Justin Thomas over to center, put Carson Bowles in left, and then that'd give you. You could actually go with eight lefties or eight righties in a lineup if you needed to. I mean, there's so much flexibility with this lineup. Or on the flip side of that, you could load up with lefties if you needed to. I mean, it's a good problem to have for Dave, but boy, it's tough making out that lineup card. I love what he says, though. He says, I forget how he words it. He said, the players make out the lineup. Yeah. I just write in
their
names.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly right.
Love it.
Hey, before we get to Mark Etheridge of D1 Baseball, do you like the 7-inning run rules that it costs Arkansas a chance to get some of their pitchers on the mound?
No, I don't like it. I really don't, because we didn't get a chance to see some guys. Colin Fisher didn't get to pitch. You look at Steele Eaves. I was really looking forward to seeing Steele pitch. And, you know, guys like that didn't get to pitch because of the run rule. So, no, I really don't like it. I mean, it's baseball. Let's play 9 innings.
Not only that, but I think they would have liked to have seen Ben Bibee come out for another inning. And, yeah, it changes the way. I guess maybe for – some of these midweek games, I like it. I thought on opening weekend, I would have liked to have seen 9-inning games to get the guys the work who needed it.
Or maybe give it, you know, make it optional, you know, say, you know.
Well, it is optional. They agree to it beforehand. The coaches do.
Well, there you go.
I mean, like if Washington State didn't want to play 7 innings, they could have said, no, we wouldn't play 9. So,
well,
It's optional for non-conference games. It is not optional for SEC games. You get to SEC play and you got to go with 7-inning run rules.
SEC rule. I like 7 in SEC. That's a guy. But early in the year, man, I want to play 9 and just get our guys out there and let them get some work in.
When we come back, Mark Etheridge from D1Baseball.com will join us to talk about Arkansas's pitching staff and about the first weekend in the SEC. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports with analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We're joined now by Mark Etheridge. He is with D1Baseball.com. Mark, for years and years, has been kind of the voice of SEC baseball. Remember him from the old days, Mark, SEBaseball.com. That's how back – or how far back did that date?
Yeah, I've been doing this, I don't know, 25, 26 years now. Wow. So it's been, I've earned all this gray hair that I've accumulated.
I think we all have. you wrote something this weekend, and it was really, just kind of it was a thought that you had in the preseason that you thought Arkansas had the best rotation in the country. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about them after you've seen them for four games?
Yeah, and I think it's the depth and the options along with the high quality talent that made me make that proclamation. With Gabe Gackle, we were all so impressed with him last year as a freshman, being the clutch guy at the end of the game, and now he moves into the rotation. And there's no questioning the stuff. It's just, how is he going to stretch out? Is he going to be able to have that consistency over the course of the season? And he was really good. I mean, the part I saw this weekend, of course, you know how it is when you're trying to cover the whole sport. You see bits and pieces of everything, but mm-hmm. I did get to see some of him on Friday. And, with Zach Root and really with Bottle Cheese as well, I mean, two of the top transfers in the country, everyone wanted them, and Arkansas got both of them. And you throw in Gage Wood into that mix, you throw in, Cole Gibler and Ben Bibee, and I mean, we can go through the pitching staff here. There's so many talented options who could start and would start for most teams, and Arkansas is going to get to use three of them, right? And I think that's the piece where if you have a guy who's a little bit dinged or needs a week off or maybe just doesn't have it one day, you've got so many different options you can go to and high quality options everyone wants. And that's for me the difference in them and some of the other great staffs out there. Also, so Florida State this weekend, and that's if there's a contender, that may be it, because they're really good in that rotation. I just don't know that they have as many guys at that level as Arkansas does.
Bubba?
I've read a lot, Mark, about LSU staff and mm-hmm. who kind of compares to the Razorback staff in the SEC this year?
Yeah, that's probably – I would go LSU. The difference with LSU is I don't know that they've decided who's going to be, that top-level guy, that Friday, Saturday. I do think there's a little bit more volatility with where they end up in the rotation. The good news for them is they have plenty of options. They had really eight pitchers that they felt good about starting in the fall and stretched them all out to just kind of let it settle. And Cade Anderson, who's pitched primarily midweek but had some success as a freshman a year ago, lefty who's really made a jump from both in velocity and just pitchability and maturity from last year to this year, moved into the Friday role and pitched really well. Anthony Ianson, transfer from UC San Diego, big curveball, good, mid-90s heater. He pitched Saturday and pitched well. And then Chase Shores, who's a fascinating character. He was a top recruit 2 years ago, was in their starting rotation as a true freshman early in the year, and then ended up with Tommy John, has really missed both years, missed the rest of that year and then missed last year. And, he's up to 98, 99 miles an hour. So they've got all of those guys, and then they've got others behind them because they brought in such a talented class. William Schmidt, who might be the top freshman who enrolled anywhere this year. He's really that kind of pitcher, so they've got a lot of options. I just don't think there's quite the proven productivity that Arkansas guys had heading into the season.
Mark, what were the big takeaways you had from week one in the SEC?
Ole Miss, I think them going and playing three ranked teams and going 2-1, that was just what they needed. After 2 years of not having things go the way they wanted, they needed some momentum. They needed something good to happen. And now they go, they have the run rule win over Clemson the day after Texas has their way with them. I felt like that was important for them to bounce back and have something positive to take into the pre-conference part of their schedule won't be as challenging as what they just faced. So they need to, they have a chance to have some true momentum when mid-March rolls around and they head into conference play.
Was it odd to see Paul Maneri back in a dugout this weekend?
Yeah, you know, when he left LSU, most of us felt like, you know, maybe he'd show up on TV because he's such an articulate guy, but that we wouldn't see him in a dugout. And then here he is. And I think with South Carolina, they're an interesting club because we have questions on the mound with them. I think they're going to hit. I think what we need to see for them, they have plenty of depth. I just don't know that they have the elite talent that the top of the conference has. But that's the part of this is we don't really know. And guys are allowed to get better. And I think that's where South Carolina is, where they need some pitchers to step forward. I think Jake McCoy did on Sunday, pitched really well. Matthew Becker pitched really well on Saturday. They've got enough options, especially if they continue to hit.
And by the same token, it kind of felt like a Photoshop to see Schlossnagel in the burnt orange. I mean, I know that he left, and we've had a whole offseason to prepare for that, but that was a little bit striking.
Yeah, it was. I think the word I used was jarring when I saw him. It was just, oh, wow, this is real now. I do feel like that Texas, they are going to hit. They returned so much, and they added some pieces, and that's a really talented lineup. Adrian Rodriguez, a freshman, hit two home runs opening weekend. They're going to hit. The question is pitching, and they answer those questions in the first two games. Jared Spencer, the Indiana State transfer, he was a reliever there, stepped into the Friday role and was really good. And then Harrison on Saturday pitched phenomenal, kind of a touch and feel lefty who's been injured most of his career and was able to come through and have a lot of success. Most of us felt heading into the year that Texas might have enough depth on the mound to have success, but we didn't know about those frontline guys. Would they be able to match, you know, the top teams in the SEC? Well, after one weekend, they were able to do that, and that's a testament to Max Wiener, their pitching coach, who did such a great job at A&M last year.
Well, Mark, I got a question about – give me your opinion on the conference realignment, how now we're 1 through 16 – versus, you know, the East versus West or versus mm-hmm. I'm one that says I'd love to see us mirror major leagues where you've got four teams mm-hmm. conferences. But what are your thoughts on that? And what do you think what was the thought process going into that? Who made the decision and why was that made?
Well, I feel like it was based on the scheduling aspect of it, because the schedules are so unbalanced in these large leagues, okay? So you do want to have some semblance of, like, permanent opponents so that, you know, Texas always plays Texas A&M. We don't want to get cheated out of that, right? Alabama always plays Auburn. Mississippi State and Ole Miss, they got to play, right? So you need to have some semblance of playing those rival opponents every year. However, you don't want to go 7 or 8 years without playing somebody. So I do feel like having that rotating schedule is where they landed with this. You know, you mentioned, you know, those quadrants or pods or however you want to group that into four. That would work if you can align them correctly, right? I think the challenge to that is sometimes five fits and three fits, and what do you do with that fourth team? Right, somebody's going to get shorted, and that's the challenge of that. But I do feel like with this new conference schedule compared to the way it was, you know, way that we're used to, you missed three opponents, okay? And you played everyone in your division, and then you missed three from the other side. Well, now you miss five, and there are no divisions. So it could be very unbalanced. You look at who Mississippi State misses this year, and they miss five of the best teams in the conference, and then you look at who some of the other teams play, and they may miss three or four, you know, of the worst teams, at least in preseason. And it's certainly going to affect it, and it makes people like me and hopefully the selection committee look at more than just that win-loss conference record, and instead your strength of schedule of how that one loss record is accumulated.
You know, Mark, you probably heard this on that video conference, if you will, leading up to the games down in Arlington. I asked Mike Bianco about the divisions, and I thought it was kind of striking that he and Schlossnagel both said that the coaches wanted to keep the divisions, and then someone above them made a different decision. It usually, the way these work out is that, you know, the ADs are going to, you know, propose what their coaches have told them. It's just, this is one of the really few times I can think of where the administration has gone differently than the wishes of the coaches, which Schlossnagel and Bianco both said was unanimous that they wanted to keep divisions.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting how would they divide those divisions. Would you push Alabama Auburn to the east? And because you got Oklahoma and Texas are both in the west, so yeah. What do you do with Missouri, who's always been in the east? I think it's how you divide that is really the stumbling block, getting everyone to agree. I can see why you want to, the teams that you've played for decades now, you want to continue to play them and continue those rivalries.
Okay, let's get you out of here on this, Mark. The feel good moment of the weekend, obviously, Cade Ballou. And the home run for Auburn, for those who don't know, his mother passed away of cancer that morning. And then they're playing their season opener, and he hits a home run. And it was just a really cool moment.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, you think about all the emotions of that day for him. I mean, you're so excited about, okay, just baseball. You're so excited about opening day. Your season's finally starting. Auburn renovated the ballpark. It's all new. You have all this going on, and then that's the day that your mom passes away, and you're able to put, maybe under those circumstances, it's good to have that distraction and to go out and do something that's familiar and something that you want to be able to that you're good at. And then you go out and hit that home run. And then I find out later that the fan that caught the home run ball got it back to him. I mean, it was just in a terrible moment for him. It was certainly a moment of pride that everyone, you know, certainly in Auburn and really the whole baseball community kind of rallied around.
Yeah, I don't know if feel good's the right word. That's the word I use. But it was just it was such a great moment, though, for him. And that's one of those really cool deals that I'll take with me probably all season long. Mark, we appreciate your time. There's so many teams in the SEC now. I think we only talked about maybe like half of them. So you can check out Mark at d1baseball.com, their SEC blog, and for the latest on the SEC. Appreciate it, Mark.
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
All right. Mark Etheridge does a great job covering SEC baseball. Well, we appreciate you being with us today. Bubba will be back on Thursday. He may be taking his snow dogs here into the studio. What do you think?
Oh, we're getting ready to go sledding here in a little bit. As soon as that snow accumulates, we'll be ready to go.
We're looking out our window. It's coming down at a fairly good rate right now. I'm glad they're not playing here in Fayetteville this weekend. Games in Austin, or in not Austin, Arlington this weekend. Razorbacks playing Kansas State, TCU, and Michigan on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll see Bubba on Thursday on our podcast. Tomorrow we'll preview Arkansas Auburn. Razorbacks taking on the top-ranked Tigers in basketball tomorrow night down on the Plains. We appreciate you being here. Hope we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.